Okay, here it is. The host is not in the meeting room.
Are we muted?
Hi. What about everyone?
No. It's all women. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. So, I'm just going to ask everybody to mute themselves so that there's no background noise. And you can always unmute yourself if you have a question. So today is going to be a different kind of a class. Every week's going to be a little bit different. Today it's going to be more philosophical. Is everybody able to hear me? Just nod your head if you're able to hear me. Okay, great. So I hope that you see that. So we're able to download the sheets. I put it on the background over here. Does everybody see it? Just nod your head if you can see it in the background. Excellent. Okay, so it's going to be very text-oriented today. Last week was not as text-oriented. This week it's very text-oriented because I want to discuss a very specific issue, a very specific problem, which I consider to be a problem, a Jewish problem. And it is a very appropriate problem for these week's parshios, which is Bahar and Bichukosai. So we're going to focus on Bichukosai. As you know, Bichukosai is the parsha that deals with Tochicha, which is the reproof, which is the chastisement of the Jewish people by God through Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's a very difficult parsha to read. And it deals with punishment for the Jewish people for not keeping the Torah and the reward that the Jewish people have for, yes, keeping the Torah. So just some details. We're not going to actually go into the Chumash. Just suffice it to say that in Parsha Bechukotai, there are a whole group of blessings, and the blessings are contingent upon keeping the Torah and its mitzvahs. And then there are a whole bunch of curses, klalot, which are contingent upon violating the mitzvahs of the Torah. If you violate the mitzvahs of the Torah, you are punished. And if you keep them, you are rewarded. Some basic ideas about reward and punishment. And there was some material that I just want to use background material. So first let's look at the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra is source number one. And the Ibn Ezra tells us, I'm going to be reading from the first line, but the last word on the first line, Kom Meyut, Vo'lech Etchem Kom Meyut, God says to the Jewish people that you will be upright. I will lead, if you follow the mitzvahs, I will lead you and you will be upright. He says, B'komas Kufa, that you'll be able to stand straight, meaning that you will be proud of what you do. Reke Moach Amru, so Ibn Ezra is using a very sharp term here. People who are empty-minded. Moach is a brain. In other words, they have weak brains or empty brains. Look at this religion. There are more curses than there are blessings. And they find that to be very difficult. More curses than blessings. What kind of religion is this? And then the Ibn Ezra says, V'lo amru emet, but they're not saying the truth. The brachot are mentioned and generally, and those brachot that are general blessings, they can, if you were to flesh them out, there would be thousands of blessings, but they're just general statements. And when it came to the curses, there were very specific illnesses and various specific punishments. If you look carefully, even if you don't have an empty mind, then you will be able to see that what I'm saying is true. Just the very next source corroborates that. The Ibn Ezra does not want to quote Midrashim, but the rabbis of the Midrash corroborate what he says. If you look where it's underlined, and it says, Rabbi Menachem, Katanada Rabbi Lazar, Barabina Amar, Menachem, the son-in-law of Rabbi Lazar, Barabina said, everybody's got to mute themselves because otherwise there's a lot of background noise. Thank you. Again, if you have anything that you want to say, your comments are more than welcome. You just unmute yourself, but the background noise that you're not even aware of is very distracting. Anyways, so the rabbis of the Midrash say, Amar chashavti mashe katavta lana b'torah im b'chukol chai teilechu. I thought that when I read the parsha of b'chukol tai umachtiv taman, what does it say before us? V'natati shalom ba'aris v'mlotish muli machtiv taman v'yasavti la'asvad chem. I'm going to continue to punish you again and again. Rabbi Abba, brother of Yechiyah, b'shem Abinu Tamar, chashavti brachot, chashavti chalot. Now, it's chishavti, which means I calculated the amount of blessings that there are, and I calculated the amount of curses there are. Brachot, me alef ataf. If you read the brachot, the way the Torah alludes to it, it begins, im b'chukot ha'teleichu, and then it says, olech et chom miyut. So it begins with letter Aleph, M, and it ends with the very last letter of the bracha is Taf, Kom Meyut. That's the full alphabet from Aleph until Taf. So we wrote Mivav Va'ad Hey, but the Klalot, the curses, they begin with the M, Lo Tishmo, which is a Vav, and it ends with a Hey, Va'ad Hey. So it's Vav and Hey, that's two letters, one next to the other, hey vav, which means very few. And even then, it's vav to hey, which is backwards. Amrav Amen in Zechitan Haveni Hofech Lachem Klalot the Brachot, to teach that if you are you merit it, even though you sin, but you turn it around, I'll give you all of the, I'll turn things around. Just like vav to hey is reversed, I'll turn the Brachot in the Klalot into Brachot. Now, a source that you don't have, because I couldn't get it on the Bar Ilan because it's in the Kitfei HaSforno, it's Rabbi Avadia Sforno's writings, and it's not in his commentary on the Torah, so I couldn't get it on with using the program that I use. He says a very interesting thing. He says that there's a tremendous difference between when God will bless the Jewish people and when, God forbid, he will punish the Jewish people. And he says that all you really need to do, he says, he's not saying this is optimal, but this is what he says, all you really need to do is a casual kind of fulfillment of the mitzvahs. Even if you don't do all of them, even if you're very casual, but you're dedicated to them, and you try to do them, that's enough, that's sufficient for the blessings. However, in order to be punished, you really have to revile the Torah. It says, meaning that if you revile the Torah, you hate the Torah, you despise the Torah, you say the Torah is just like a waste of time, then and only then do you get the kala. He's saying that in general, what is needed to be blessed by God is much easier. It's much less of a difficult task than it is to be punished. In order to get punished, you really, really have to revile the Torah. But now I want to go into the something which is much, much different in terms of the nature of what we are discussing. So let me just scroll down. And let us look at a number of works that we don't usually discuss these works. These are very famous works, and from time to time we'll cite them, but today there are going to be a whole bunch of these citations, one after the other, from these books. And the first book is known as the Sefer HaIkarim, as you can see. And the Sefer HaIkarim was written by a great Spanish philosopher, Rabbi Yosef Albo. And Rabbi Yosef Albo lived, he was born in 1380 in Spain, and he died in 1444. So he was clearly a person who spanned, but an earlier period, but he spanned the 14th into the 15th century, and he wrote a book, Sefer HaIkarim. Just a word about the book. I'm always pressed for time, so I'm scared to say too much. And I don't finish what I want to do. But just a word about the book. The book, he was a student, the best student of one of the great philosophers, Rabbi Chasdai Kreskes, and he wrote a book, Sefer HaIkarim, and in it, in a manner of speaking, he takes Maimonides to task, the Rambam to task, because the Rambam writes that there are 13 Ikarei HaYahadut, there are 13 fundamental principles of Judaism, but the Rambam says that if you don't believe all 13, it's not a good thing. He uses a very sharp term, if you don't believe the 13. So there was a whole methodology for the next three centuries, to try to either corroborate what the Rambam said or to argue with the Rambam, to dispute him. One of the people who disputed him was the teacher of Rabbi Yosef Albo, Rabbi Chasdai Kreskes, and he said there aren't 13, there are 6. And his student, Rabbi Yosef Albo, said, in fact, you know, teacher, Rebbe, there aren't 6, there are really 3. And he lists 3 different fundamental principles, and the book is divided into those 3 principles. So one of the principles is sachar va'onesh, reward and punishment, as one of the 3 fundamental principles of Judaism. And in that 4th ma'amar dalad that we're about to learn towards the very end is where we're going to pick up. And he asks a basic question. Now, if you were to ask most quote-unquote secular scholars who have some knowledge of Judaism, and you would ask them, does Judaism believe in reward and punishment after you die? Most of them would say, absolutely not. I read the Bible, I read the prophets, there's no mention whatsoever of any kind of reward and punishment after you die. As a matter of fact, there's no notion of existence after you die. And the reason that they would say that is because, in fact, what they said is true. There is no mention of that in the entire Torah. But what we believe that there is. So this is a question that vexed many of the great philosophers in the medieval period, which is, why is there no mention, why is there not even an allusion for Tchiyat HaMetim, for resurrection, for Mashiach? There are statements that are explicit, there are many allusions, but when it comes to life after death, it's not even an allusion, it would seem. And they're bothered by this. And let's begin to read it. We're going to skip around a lot for a time. I gave you these selections so that when I'm not around, you can read them yourself. Most of you are able to read these sources yourself. And I'd like to now deal with the issue that many of the early rabbis and later rabbis have a doubt about. Lama lo niskar b'Torah ha-yi'ud ha-ruchani b'feirush. If you look in the entire Torah, you will only find reward and punishment that are physical. If you keep the Torah, there's going to be a lot of rain. There's going to be bumper crops. You're going to live long. You're going to have a good life. You'll have a lot of children. You won't have any miscarriages. There won't be any drought. There won't be any blight, etc., etc. All of these are physical rewards. And if you don't keep the Torah, there's not going to be any rain and whatever it is that we read. But all of these are physical. There's nothing about the soul. There's nothing about what happens when you no longer have physicality, when you're dead. And he's going to cite a number of possible reasons that people give. All of them are great rabbis, and he's going to argue. He's going to show why these are insufficient. So I'm going to read them quickly. V'yesh mi shekatab beheter zeh, ki lefi shagmul haruchani hu dover amok, v'kasher la'sechol enushi l'tzairo la'sigo. This notion of immortality of the soul, the idea of a bodiless existence, is something which is very difficult for the human psyche or the human intelligence to be able to grasp. The Torah was given to everybody, to the wise and to the people who are just the regular citizens. Therefore, the Torah was given to everybody. And therefore, God decided that it was proper to give people a taste of reward and punishment that they can understand, that they can assimilate. But if they would speak about spiritual or a soulful reward, there's no perception. You can't use your five senses to in any way apprehend the soul. There's no way to do that. Moreover, they couldn't even imagine that. They couldn't even theorize that. And then therefore they would deny it. People would say, there's no reward, there's no punishment, it's all a joke, you're dead, that's the end of it. Might as well have a good life, do whatever you want. And therefore, in order to give them an impetus to do the mitzvot and not to abandon the Torah, that's why you have reward and punishment that are all physical. Because when people will see, oh, I kept the Torah, and look at these blessings, then they say, okay, you know, so I don't really get all this stuff in the Torah, but I see at least the stuff I understand is true. You know, there is the incentive to do the right thing. When you do the right thing, you're rewarded. And they would see this, and then they would say, okay, I'm buying the whole package. So he says, this explanation, this is not something which answers the question. Why would they, even if it's true that physically, the physical reward and punishment come by keeping the Torah or by abandoning the Torah, how would they make that, how would they bridge that and think about something which is spiritual? As a matter of fact, it would do just the opposite. Why are you saying that the Torah doesn't deal with anything which is abstract? The Torah doesn't deal with anything which is spiritual, metaphysical. The Torah does. As a matter of fact, the Torah even says, even though I am God who spoke to you, I have no physicality. I'm totally removed from anything which is physical. The Torah says that. And the Torah speaks obviously about something that is not perceived. You can't perceive God. You can't perceive something that is totally devoid of anything which is physical. So that clearly the Torah is very explicit about not in any way ascribing any kind of physicality to God. So then clearly the Torah expects that every single Jew is going to understand there's something that you can perceive and there are things that you cannot perceive. And the fact that you cannot see them, you cannot feel them, you cannot taste them, doesn't mean that they don't exist. Not everything that you don't know about doesn't exist because you don't know about it.
It
was sufficient for the Torah to write these things in a very mundane manner. The people who are not that intellectually endowed or the people who are not philosophically trained, they'll just accept whatever is said because it doesn't make that much of a difference to them. And the people who are wise, they'll understand this more profoundly. You can speak about the event. There's a reward and punishment after you die. You know, Dante had a good understanding of it. He wasn't a Jew. He wrote the Divine Comedy. Many people speak about heaven and hell. You read the Quran, it's all about heaven and hell. You read the Bible, the New Testament is all about heaven and hell. So why couldn't God in the Torah write about that? And therefore, Rabbi Albo says, I don't accept that explanation. We'll see that many great rabbis had that explanation. There's one more of the explanations and his response. And there were others who say, let me just scroll up. The reason that spiritual reward is not mentioned. L'mah shatorah lo tiyaid ela hadvarim habaim derech neis ba'ot mofet kamo hayyudim hagashmiyim habaim al kiyum mitzvot shelo kederech tivo u'min hago shel olam. This happens to be the Ramban Nachmanides explanation, which is the Torah only has to tell you things that you could not know on your own, things that are not based upon logic, things that are not based upon reason, such as things that are miraculous, that you never would have arrived at the conclusion that these things would be true, such as the fact that if you keep the mitzvot, there's physical blessing. If you don't keep the mitzvot, there's physical punishment. What does that have to do with nature? In other words, if it says in the Torah that if you keep the mitzvot, if you keep Shabbos, then there'll be a lot of rain, there won't be any drought. What does rain have to do with keeping Shabbos? Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. Because you can keep Shabbos by doing nothing. And yet, it's going to rain. And if you don't keep the Shabbos, it's not going to rain. What is the meteorological relationship between keeping or not keeping Shabbos? There is none. So the fact that it's true, that if you don't keep the mitzvahs, there's going to be a drought. If you do keep the mitzvahs, there's abundant rain. We say this in Shema. Every day when you say Shema, you're saying this. That's a miracle. That's Shelo Kederech Tivo Minhago Shel Olam. Or he's citing the one because it's from Parshas Bahar. Kamo v'tziviti et b'chati lachem b'shana ha-shishit. Va'asat et ha-tfuwa l'shlosh ha-shanim. Jemi derech minhag ha-teva la'asot ha-tfuwa l'chol shana ha-shishit shel shmita l'gimel shanim. What does God say? If you keep the Shemitah year, I will give you a bumper crop in the sixth year that will suffice for the sixth year, the seventh year, and the eighth year. Now, well, how does that happen? How does that happen? That has to be a miracle. And he goes on and on. And he says, and that's why. But when it comes to spiritual reward, that's obvious. I'm going to the last line of this paragraph. That's the nature of the soul. The soul is a spiritual entity. So obviously, it's going to survive biological death, physical death. It's a natural occurrence. If you study metaphysics, right? You study physics, you know all about the world. You study metaphysics, you know about the soul. So in metaphysics 1.1, they'll tell you that the soul survives biological death. See, he says, that's the Ramban's answer. The Gamzeh Davar Chalush, that's very weak. That's very weak. Now, okay, I agree. It's obvious that a person has the immortality of the soul. That's how the soul is. But then again, what about a person's ability to choose what to do? Shamrat Torah, Re'ena Tati Lefanecha Yom, Et HaChayim Ve'et HaTov, U'Bachartah B'Chayim. I have to also keep in mind, in terms of the era in which he lived, and where Rabbi Yosef Abo lived, there were many, many philosophers, many of them Muslim, of the Kalam, the Ashariites of the Kalam, of the Muslim thinkers, and then there were also Christian thinkers who believed in determinism, that everything that a person did was predetermined, just like Calvin, that were predetermined, and a person, everything you do is predetermined by God, because if God is all-knowing, and God is not governed by time, so then God knows what you did. So if God knows what you did, you're compromising God's knowledge if you choose to do something that God didn't already know that you did. And therefore, there's no freedom of choice. Yet the Torah tells you something which is not that obvious, that you uvacharta b'chayim. The same thing is true about creation. There are many people, as a matter of fact, most people don't believe today, most people then and most people today, they don't believe that God created the world. They believe in the Big Bang. They believe that the world created itself. And over a period of billions and billions of years of evolution, so this is what we have today. But there's no God, and there's no creation of the world. Now, that's also something that you can come to a conclusion logically, and yet God told you, hey, Bereshis bara Elokim, I created the world. And the same thing is true of many, many other kinds of philosophical and theological evidence that you have that's explicit in the Torah. And therefore, he says, I don't accept that reasoning at all. So let me, I don't want to read the rest. You can read that yourself. Because his answer is, if, I'll tell you what his answer is, and you'll see if it's better than the other two answers that he didn't like. His answer is that when the Torah speaks about reward and punishment, like in Parashat Bechukotai, or in the Parashat of Shema, it's a generalized statement that's made to the Jewish people as a group, as a people. So let's say there are 15 million Jews. So God is addressing all 15 million Jews, and he's saying to them, you know, if you behave and keep the Torah, there will be reward. Now, it can't rain for a person who keeps the Shabbos, and next door his neighbor doesn't keep the Shabbos, so it's not going to rain. Because rain is in a region. Rain is an area, and it can't discriminate. The rain can't discriminate between people who keep the Torah and who don't keep the Torah. But if God would want to create a drought, so then the drought's going to affect everybody. But and therefore, that's how the Torah can speak. It can speak about reward and punishment in a generalized way for the people, for the land, for the Jewish people. So if the majority of the Jewish people are worthy of the blessing, even the people, the minority who are not worthy, they will be blessed, because that's how physical reward and punishment are doled out. If the majority of the Jewish people don't keep the Torah, then God's going to punish all the Jewish people, even the people, because physical punishment upon nature cannot be doled out singly to different individuals. But I'm going to read the very end where he says, Aval haschar haprati. I don't know if I'm highlighting it properly, but Aval haschar haprati l'chol echad v'echad. But when you speak about life after death, that is something so individualized. That is something so private. That's every single individual gets his own reward and punishment. And you can't describe that in the Torah because everybody's different. And this is his answer to the question. That is something that cannot be mentioned. But v'ulam ikar haschar ha'ishi. Etc. And that is the reason why he says it's not mentioned, because there's no way to properly mention. So again, as I said, let us see if indeed his reason is better than the other people's reasons. But meanwhile, it seems that no reason that we have seen so far is sufficient to answer that question, which now brings us to somebody he lived a little bit after Rabbi Yosef Albo, and he is the Abravanel, Rabbi Don Isaac Abravanel, who died in 1508. He suffered through Gerus Sfarad, and he died in 1508. I believe he died in Portugal. Okay, so now he asks exactly the same question in his commentary on the Torah. And so if you see it, it's in number 4 and it's underlined, Hasheila. Now his technique is to ask many questions, and his commentary, in a running commentary, he answers the questions, and as he answers them, he tells you, I've just answered my first question, I've just answered my 15th question. But here he has a question, which is our question, Hasheila Harishana, Lama ze hayu yiyudei ha-Torah uschara kulam, Dvarim Gashmiim, why are all of the predictions of the Torah and all of the reward and punishment of the Torah all physical? Moshe Zachru b'Brit Hazeh lo yadam b'shleimut hanafshii uschar hanshama achar hamavet v'asher husov kol adam. Why doesn't the Torah mention what happens to you if you're a righteous person when you die and the reward that accrues to your soul? Everybody's going to die. Everybody should be interested in that. And that's where a person's true success and the greatest good can be garnered. Ukvar, he says, Shutshatu Hashara Ha'ivim, Emakatuv Hazeh, the Kihashu Hayotli Yisrael Schar Nafshi Iachara Mavet Mpezeh. Now he is speaking about the assault of the Christians in their debates against the Jews. There were many debates in the medieval period. One of the main attacks that they had, aside from their rejecting of Jesus, is the fact that they do not believe, Jews do not believe in reward and punishment, and they do not believe in life after death. Christianity does, and Jews don't. Gam Yikshe, no, this is what so we're saying is, you know, sort of God made it very easy for the people to say that and to criticize Judaism. Gam Yikshe, Ech Yu Hatfuot, Yefish Mirata Mitzvot. And he also asked the question, how do you? Something that Rabbi Yosef Abu addressed was, but how do you do that? How do you do physical reward to the righteous and to the wicked when they're living side by side? Okay, so let's look at his first answer. We're only going to look at his first answer. He has seven answers. We're going to look at his first answer and his seventh answer. So his first answer is that Shuva Rishonahi Shetovot V'Haraot Sheba'u B'Parshiot HaBrit Einan Sachar V'Lo Onesh Al HaMitzvot Ki Inei HaSachar O Onesh HaAmiti Hu Ruchani Magia El HaNefesh Ba'Olam HaNeshamot V'Schar Mitzvot B'Hai Alma Leka. Meaning, the Torah does not speak about real reward and punishment. Real reward and punishment is what takes place to the soul after you die in the world of souls. And there is no true reward for keeping the mitzvot or violating the mitzvot in this world. But HaTorah lo ratzta lehazkir sachar ha-mitzvot v'ansham ha-amiti. And the reason that the Torah did not mention this is a person should not fulfill the beautiful mitzvot of the Torah either in anticipation of reward. I'm just doing this. I want the reward. I want the profit. I want to be rich in the next world. Or not follow what you shouldn't do. In other words, or not sin only out of fear of punishment. God wanted the Jew to do the mitzvot for their own sake. You should love the Lord thy God. Whatever you do religiously should only be done out of love. You find that in Tehillim. A love mitzvot alone. A love is a charam mitzvot. Aval hatovot v'haraosin is karub v'divrei habrit hayu bilvad. Asarat hamonim v'hachakat hadvarim ha'amakvim et ha'adam mikinyan shleimuto. In other words, the way that you should look at the rewards and punishment in the Torah are not really anything that's reward or punishment, but it is the opportunity to keep the Torah or not keep the Torah. Because when things are good, there's prosperity and there's no sickness, and there is abundant food to eat, and there's no war, well, then a person has a very great opportunity to fulfill the mitzvot of the Torah very easily. But if there's war, and there's famine, and there's disease, and there's pestilence, and all of those things, well, then it's going to be much harder to keep the mitzvot. That's the reward and punishment of the Torah. Easier access of the mitzvot, or more difficult access of the mitzvot. That's what the reward and punishment is, but it's not anything to you. And he says, we're going to see if this is true. He's quoting the Rambam, and in fact, it's not so true, unfortunately, that the Rambam addresses this issue and says that. The Rambam does say this, but in a different regard. We'll see it a little bit later in the Rambam. That the Yom Kippur say, "V'hamadam v'ani b'makom neskar ta'aniti ta'anot v'abot keneged hadat hazeh." And I am going to write a book, and he did write a book called Rosh Hamanah, where he argues with the Rambam about this. But in fact, he's being slightly unfair that the Rambam doesn't say that exactly. Now I want to just go to his seventh answer.
In
Now, there cannot be any spiritual reward or punishment that's mentioned to all of the people. Because all of these rewards and punishment are for the nation as a whole. Now this is exactly what Rabbi Yitzhak Arama said. And it's not known. We don't know. We can suspect from certain things he says without attribution. We suspect that he knew. He read the writings of Rabbi Yosef Alba. I mean, he actually mentioned some of the things Rabbi Yosef Alba said. So he's aware of this. And that was Rabbi Yosef Alba's name. So he named Vibuyak Shamim Uberchat HaTzvuot V'Nitzachon HaYavim, abundant rain, abundant crops, victory over enemies. V'Shar HaDvarim Sheniskeru Kan Kulam Hem Kololim El HaUma. Ki Lo Yitachen Sheyiyu HaYehudim HaElu L'Adam Echad U'L'Shcheinav HaRaim Yeh HaDavar BeHefech. Like it can't be rain in one house and not rain the next field. So what we read about in the Torah is a covenant, and the covenant is with the nation as a whole. And it goes based upon the majority of the Jews. That's why it says im bichu kotai teilechu im lo tishmu, plural. Even though in Parsha Ki Tavo, we have a second tochecha. It is in the plural. It is in the singular. Even so, kolam hem keneged ha'uma. But if you look at the punishments and the rewards, again, they are national. Yoleich Hashem otcha v'et malkecha. God will take you, meaning the nation, and your king. Asher tesemelach Yisrael Hashem olecha goy merachok. Shem kolam yudim keneged ha'uma. All of these predictions are for the nation as a whole. It was given to the nation as a whole. Amnam, he says, Yehudei ha-nefesh eina ela l'cho ish ba-ish mi-Yisrael b'pratiyut l'fi she-betovot ha-gashmiyut ha-ulam o ha-ir o ha-am nidon acharei rubo. That is based upon the majority. And sometimes if there are righteous people, so they get punished together with the wicked, even though they are not deserving of it, because God's judgment is based upon the rogue, it's based upon the majority, etc., etc. And that's the answer that he gives. That's the Abavano. So still, one would imagine that we are still hungry for an answer. So we've seen a few answers, and there seems to be an issue with all of them. Now, we're going to go to the next selection, number 6, which comes from the Sefer Kuzari. The Sefer Kuzari was one of the earliest books of philosophy, if not the earliest book of Jewish philosophy. It was written by Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi was a Neoplatonic philosopher, and he lived in Spain, actually Toledo, Spain. And he was born in 1075, and he died in 1141. So he was basically an 11th and early 12th, first half of the 12th century Jewish philosopher. So he's earlier than any of the other philosophers that we have ever read yet. And therefore, we're not going to find him quoting anybody, because he's the first book on Jewish philosophy. So he can only quote himself, which is what the book is. Now, the way the book was written, just in 2 seconds, it is written as a dialogue between a king, the king of the Khazars, an Asian kingdom that was very famous in the medieval period, and the king of the Khazars had a dream, and in the dream, God comes to him, and God says to him, your ways are pleasing to me, you're a benevolent king, and your ways are ethical and moral, but your belief system, you're a pagan, your belief system, you've got to find out the truth. So he called the Kuzari, consulted with a Christian, with a Muslim, with a philosopher, and with a rabbi called the Chaver. And the book is about the dialogue between the king and the Chaver. So if you look at number 6, Amar HaKuzari, the king says to the rabbi, to Rabbi Yehuda Levi, Ani ro'eh shiyudei zulatchem shmeinim udeshenim mi yiudeichem. I look at other religions, and I see that the rewards that they are going to get are much greater than the rewards that you and your religion have. You don't have much in the way of reward. You've got bumper crops. You've got, you know, no war. Okay, but in the other religions, there's a whole lot more than that. Just think about in Islam, which I have. It's a lot more than that. Omar HaChaver, so the rabbi gives him one simple answer. Avalchim kulam achar hamavet ve'ein b'chayim bahem davar sheyoreh aleihem. But if you notice the other religions, in Christianity, life is a veil of tears. Life is terrible. Even in Islam, it's very, very difficult. Islam's a very difficult religion. And there's nothing, and all the reward and punishment is when you die. But if you look at Judaism, there's reward in this world as well. You have a good life. That's what he says as his initial answer. But if you notice, the question is Kuftal at 104. His answer that we just read is 105. But the dialogue continues, and he's not satisfied at all. The king is not satisfied at all with the answers that the rabbi is giving him. And so finally, we're going to go to number 115, where the rabbi finds that he has to answer the question, not briefly, but he has to explicate, and he has to go into greater detail of his answer. And he says, Matzata makom cherpati melechuzar. You have found my degradation, king of the Khazars. Cain who? Ilu hayu rubenu mikabel hadalut kenia lelokim. Because the king said to him, you're going to tell me about reward and punishment when you are the most despised, punished group of people in the world? So he says, yes, indeed, that's our degradation. But ilu haya rubenu mekabel hadalut kni'a le'lokim, if we would accept our role in the exile, in terms of being downtrodden, if we would accept that and it would humble us to our God, ubavur torato and his Torah, lo haya manichenu hanyan ha'eloki kol zman haroch hazeh, we would not have lost prophecy, and we would not have lost our elevated position for the time that we have, for this and that time was like a 1,500 years. Aval hama'at mimenu al hadat hazot, v'yesh sachal l'rov, mipnei shehu nosei ol hagalut bein hechrech v'ratzon. But I want you to know something, that in our accepting our role in the exile, if it's with our will or even against our will, we are getting reward for that. Ki'ilu haya rotze haya chaver l'nogeso oto b'mila sheyoma b'li torach. Because if God wanted to worse to us, God could immediately dispatch us with one word without any difficulty. U'chmoze einenu aved etzel ha'shofet ha'tzadik. Ki'ilu hayinu sovlim ha'galut hazeh v'hadalut Hashem ho'elokim kira'ui. If we would accept our punishment by being exiled and by our very, very denigrated position properly, you know, the Pe'er Hador Sha'anu Mitzapim HaMashiach, then we would be in a situation where we'd be waiting, anticipating the Messiah. V'hayinu mekarvim et ha'yishua ha'atida sha'anu miyachlim otah, v'anachnu ein anachnu mishavim im nafshotenu chola nichnas b'tovatenu b'meila b'vad. And it's not, our religion is not the kind of religion like the other religions where you just profess your belief. This was a slap to Christianity, which by then was already based upon John, Paul was already antinomian. Christians do not believe in deed, they believe only in creed, what you believe, what you say, I believe, that's enough. So he says, that's not our religion. In order to fulfill our religion, our Torah, there are deeds that have to be performed, and though sometimes it's very difficult to do that. But that would purify our souls. Etc. I'm going to skip a little bit because he's just talking about how beautiful the mitzvahs of the Torah are, and that's where we have our success. He says, but all of these things that I'm speaking to you about, all of this that I'm telling you is found in our Torah, and it's found in our prophets. but I want to speak to you about something that's not in the Torah, that's not in the prophets. Scripture. They don't speak about the world to come much. Even though it's mentioned a tremendous amount in our oral tradition. And that's true. It's true. It does say in our prophets, El Ha'afar Tashuv, and it speaks about resurrection of the dead. You find that in Ezekiel 38, and you find it in the book of Daniel, and in the book of Malachi, you find that the prophet Eliyahu is going to come. And you read in the book of Malachim that God took him, and it says there that he didn't die, he just went up in a whirlwind to heaven. And you see, even the Gentile prophet, the prophet Bilam, he says, he prayed, I wish I prayed to God that I'll die the same death of the Jews. So these are all allusions to life after death. And we also have the story of King Shaul, King Saul, who raised through the witch of Endor, he raised the soul of Shmuel, who had died before, and he raised his soul, and he was able to prophesize and tell Shaul, that you're going to die tomorrow. Even though what Shaul did was forbidden, Shaul wouldn't have gone to the witch, the Mechashefa, to raise the soul of Shmuel if Shaul in that early biblical period didn't believe that the soul of Shmuel existed and that it could be raised from some place. And that's why he did it. So you see there, that was the belief. It's not a new belief that the Jews just made up in the Roman period, but it was a belief that you find biblically as well. And what about the prayer? Everybody knows this. And women say this as well every morning. You're going to take my soul from me when I die, and you will return it for tchiyat hametim. And the idea of paradise. Everybody talks about paradise. The Christians talk about paradise. The Muslims talk about paradise. Lo lekachol toki im min haTorah. It comes from the Torah. Etc. etc. So that is what he is saying. He is saying that in fact, he's arguing with everybody who came after him, and he's saying in fact there is an allusion to life after death in the Torah and in the Navi. Which now brings us to the Ramban. Now, I'm very pressed for time here. So what I'm going to do is, because we already saw the Ramban, this extra material, we already saw the Ramban cited in the piece by Rabbi Yosef Albo, but I want to go to the Rambam. Now, the Rambam, as you know, was a rationalist philosopher, and nothing can get by the Rambam. But look at what he says about what happens to a person when they die. Ha'olam haba, the world to come, ein bo guf uvia, there is no body or form, ela nafshot ha-tzadikim bovad, only the souls of the righteous, lo guf, without a body, kamalachei ha-sharet, like the angels. Ho'il ve'ein bo giviyot, ein bo lo achil, and since there's no body, there's no eating and drinking, and none of the physical needs of human beings. And therefore, there are no physical attributes on yeshiva v'meida, the soul doesn't sit or stand. V'sheinan, there's no sleeping. Umita, doesn't die. V'atzev, there's no distress. Tzchok, there's no mirthfulness. V'chayot zebem, there are no emotions, human emotions, and there is no human faculties. Kacham ruchachamim harishonim. Olam haba, he's citing from the Gemara in Brachos. Olam haba, ein bolo achila, bolo shtiya, bolo tashmish. There's no physical act, no physicality. El tzadikim yoshvim va'atavatehem barashehen. The righteous sit and their crowns are upon their head. V'nehenin miziv hashchina. And they derive pleasure from the effulgence of God. Harei mitbarer lecha she'ein sham guf v'fi she'ein sham achila ushteya. Now, when it says that they sit, and I told you that there's no sitting, so what does it mean the righteous sit? So he says, Yoshvin derechida, it's a metaphor. Derechida amro, kilomar, atzadikim mitsuyin sham, the righteous souls are found there below amal, below yigia, without any travail and without any effort. It sounds like they have a head. Lomar da'at sheyadu shebigvala zachu lechayei ha'olam haba mitzuya imahem. All of the knowledge that a person accrues during their lifetime, physics and metaphysics, all of that remains with the soul after it dies, and that is the metaphor of hiata rashal, and that is the crown of glory of the righteous, their knowledge. Kinyan sha'amash lama bi'ata rasha Israel imo. Etc., etc. So that is the Rambam's take on Olam Haba. There's one more statement the Rambam makes in his Mishnah Torah. He says, when we speak about the soul, now what do we mean? Now you're going to see why the other rabbis maintained that the Torah couldn't describe the soul because most people wouldn't understand it. So now the Rambam is going to explain the soul metaphysically. He says, Kol nefesh ha'amura b'inyan zeh eina ha'neshama ha'tzricha l'guf. And when we speak about the soul in terms of the world to come, we're not speaking about the life force. That we're not speaking about. The neshama tzricha leguf, the life force. Elu tzuvat hanefesh hi hade'a shehesiga mehaborei kefi kocha vehesiga hade'ot hanefradot v'shar hama'asim. It is the part of the soul that apprehends the intellectual things. The Hatzorah should be Arnu in Yanab Harim, Hilchal Yisod, the Torah, Anikwe Nefesh be in Yanze. And he says, this kind of existence, Chayim Elu, this existence, this life, with Fisha Ain Imahen Mavet, there is no death, Shein Hamavet Elamot Aguf. Death means the body ceases to biologically function. Bein Sham Guf, Nikruut Tsuror HaChayim. That is why. If you find in the Navi, you find this in Shmuel, where it says, "Vahayatan nafsh nefesh adonit tsrura b'tsror hachayim," and this is one of the phrases that we use in the memorial prayer for the dead. It's speaking about being bound up in eternal life, meaning bound up in God's life, kaviyachol, in true absolute existence. That is the statement of the Rambam. There's one more statement of the Rambam. I know I'm really. Now, the Rambam wrote when he was very young, and when he wrote the Mishnah Torah that we just read from when he was in his 50s. But what we're about to read comes from his commentary on the Mishnah that he wrote when he was very young. He was in his teens and his 20s when he wrote it. And he writes about, in his Perush, the preface to the Chelek that speaks about Mashiach, he writes the following. Da, just like it's impossible for a person who was blind from birth to conceive of blues and reds and different hues and different pastels and different colors, below yasig hacharash et hakolot, and somebody who was deaf from birth, he would not be able to appreciate various sounds or music, below hasaris ta'avat hamishgala, or a eunuch would understand the erotic pleasure, similarly, a human being who is body and soul cannot conceive of spiritual pleasure. וכשם שאין הדג מכיר יסוד האש, לפני שהוא שרוי בהפכו, and just like the fish can't appreciate fire, because he finds himself in the water, which is the antithesis of fire, כך לא ייבדע בעולם הזה, הגשמי, תענוגי, העולם הרוחני. Similarly, it cannot be perceived, or even conceived of, in this physical world, spiritual pleasure. The she'ein etzlenu klal, oneg zulat oneg hagufot bilvad, v'hasagat hachushim min ha'machal v'mishteh v'hatashmish, v'kol shul chutz mizeh hari etzlenu biltim matzui. We only know things that are in the category of the physical. And even our emotions are based upon the physical. And he says that is the reason why we only have in the Torah, in the Tanakh, physical reward and punishment. But I want to just end with reading from the Ramban. Now, the Ramban wrote a major work on it was really his commentary on Moed Katan and Avilut, but he found necessary to write a whole long essay, a very long essay about reward and punishment, which he called Sha'ar HaGmul, which is part of the larger work, which is Torah Ta'adam. I want to just read a little bit about that because it's something that most Jews don't know about, and I think that it's very interesting. So we're coming in the middle of this. We're in the middle of this long, long essay. He says, "V'achar shenitba'er k'tzat min yanah din va'onesh." You and I are never going to speak about punishment because we're all righteous people. That God will make available to us. There are two words that the rabbis use for reward after you die. Gan Eden, paradise, and the world to come. Aside from the promises of reward in this world, in the physical world, the messianic era, or the resurrection of the dead, Shabbat Ozman, She'inan Amidabram, Atamab. We're not speaking about that because that's body and soul. Now I want to speak, he says, about reward and punishment when you die. U'tchilan ne'emar she'sachar ha'mitzvot kulan v'agmul ha'tov shalem davar pashutu v'divrei rabotenu she'ikar ha'gadol hu chayei olam haba. It's obvious that when we speak about reward and punishment, you see that in Chazal, it's talking about when you die. The moment that you die, you go to Gan Eden. That's what happens. Okay, so I'm gonna have to cut away. Now what I'm about to say is here, but I'm not gonna be able to read it because I only have a few minutes left. And this is what he says. It's a very interesting idea. And it also takes into account, it's a negation of what the Rambam said a little bit, as you're going to see. I'm going to have to skip the Akedas Yitzchak. I have to do it another time. We just don't have enough time. This is what the Ramban says. The Ramban says that when a person dies, the soul immediately goes to Gan Eden. Not Gan Eden in heaven, but he says the Gan Eden that Adam and Eve lived in, which is a place on earth. Heaven is a place on earth. Gan Eden is a place on earth. And that is a place where it is very, very physical, but at the very same time, it's a very lofty place. That's where the angels are, and that's where a person can apprehend very spiritual things. And that's why God placed Adam and Eve there, because Adam and Eve was superhuman beings that were created by God, and they were able to apprehend things that were spiritual even while they had bodies and souls. And that's where a person is, and he describes that you have to stay there for a year. Because that is a halfway house where the soul that is used to being with physical things, it needs to wean itself away from physicality. And it takes a whole year for that to take place. And when that takes place, then the soul goes up to Gan Eden Shalmala, the world of souls. And that is where the everlasting reward is until such time as resurrection of the dead, which we haven't discussed at all. And maybe at another time we'll discuss those matters, but I thought it was important, at least, especially since most Jews don't believe any of the things that we read about or are not aware of it, it's important to know that we have a full literature about what happens when a person dies and why it is that the reward and punishment that when you die is not mentioned at all in the Torah. So I hope that this elucidated that. Now our time is up. I want to wish everybody a very, very good week until we meet again. And thank everybody for coming, and wish everybody the absolute best. I also want to mention, if you can, the Garbuzes were on TV this morning. They had a very, very beautiful interview with Savannah Guthrie, and they should have their own talk show. They were very, very excellent. That's something that you'll be interested to see.
Is Adina Lockett? Oh, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Adina, you and Lawrence were excellent.
I'm so embarrassed.
Oh no, it was, look, how can you be embarrassed? It's on TV, millions of people saw it. I'm just speaking to 30 people. But it was really great. It was really great. Especially that line that the first thing that Lauren said when he woke up was, I love you. That got me, man. Whoa. But the rest of it, both of you were so cool, especially Lawrence. He was so cool.
Whoa. I know. He is. He won't look at it. He doesn't like to be in the limelight. He just really wanted to send a message of gratefulness, and he was how appreciative he was.
Well, I thought it was very nice, and I thought that she interviewed you very nicely.
She did. She did.
No.
The producer is a firm woman who I know from college. She's actually Lori Leibowitz's sister-in-law.
Oh wow, very cool. So. That was very cool. Anyway, I hope that you never have to have that kind of interview again.
I'll agree. I hope we showed from Jews in a good light. That was my goal.
You absolutely did. It was great. Take care.
Anybody see Leah's seat?
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure thing.
So how do we get rid of all those downloads?
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, Rabbi Fink.
My great pleasure.
Thank you.